Chapter 6. English fools, open the gate. Surrender. As we kept close and quiet, he said something to his men which I didn't understand, and when he had said it, the one-eyed English rascal with the patch who had stepped out when he began, said it again in English. It was only this. Boys of the Black Flag, this is to be quickly done. Take all the prisoners you can. If they don't yield, kill the children to make them. Forward. Then, they all came on at the gate, and in another half minute were smashing and splitting it in. We struck at them through the gaps and shivers, and we dropped many of them too. But, their very weight would have carried such a gate, if they had been unarmed. I soon found Sergeant Bruce at my side, forming the six remaining Marines in line Tom Packer next to me, and ordering us to fall back 3 paces, and, as they broke in, to give them our one little volley at short distance. Then, says he, receive them behind your breastwork on the bayonet, and at least, let every man of you pin one of the cursed cockchafers through the body. We checked them by our fire, slight as it was, and we checked them at the breastwork. However, they broke over it like swarms of devils they were, really and truly, more devils than men, and then it was hand to hand, indeed. We clubbed our muskets and laid about us. Even then, those two ladies always behind me were steady and ready with the arms. I had a lot of Maltese and Malays upon me, and, but for a broadsword that Miss Marion's own hand put in mine, should have got my end from them. But, was that all? No. I saw a heap of banded dark hair, and a white dress come thrice between me and them, under my own raised right arm, which each time might have destroyed the wearer of the white dress, and each time one of the lot went down, struck dead. Bruce was armed with a broadsword too, and did such things with it, that there was a cry, in half a dozen languages, of kill that sergeant. As I knew, by the cry, being raised in English, and taken up in other tongues, I had received a severe cut across the left arm a few moments before, and should have known nothing of it, except supposing that somebody had struck me a smart blow, if I had not felt weak, and seen myself covered with spouting blood, and, at the same instant of time, seen Miss Marion tearing her dress, and binding it with Mrs. Fisher's help round the wound. They called to Tom Packer, who was scouring by, to stop and guard me for 1 minute, while I was bound, or I should bleed to death in trying to defend myself. Tom stopped directly, with a good saber in his hand. In that same moment all things seemed to happen in that same moment, at such a time half a dozen had rushed howling at Sergeant Bruce. The sergeant, stepping back against the wall, stopped one owl forever with such a terrible blow, and waited for the rest to come on, with such a wonderfully unmoved face, that they stopped and looked at him. "See him now," cried Tom Packer. "Now, when I could cut him out. Gil, did I tell you to mark my words?" I implored Tom Packer in the Lord's name, as well as I could in my faintness, to go to the sergeant's aid. "I hate and detest him," says Tom, moodily wavering. "Still, he is a brave man." Then he calls out, "Sergeant Bruce, Sergeant Bruce, tell me you have driven me too hard, and are sorry for it." The sergeant, without turning his eyes from his assailants, which would have been instant death to him, answers, "No, I won't." "Sergeant Bruce," cries Tom, in a kind of an agony. "I have passed my word, that I would never save you from death, if I could, but would leave you to die. Tell me you have driven me too hard, and are sorry for it, and that shall go for nothing." One of the group laid the sergeant's bald bare head open. The sergeant laid him dead. "I tell you," says the sergeant, breathing a little short, and waiting for the next attack, "no, I won't. If you are not man enough to strike for a fellow soldier, because he wants help, and because of nothing else, I'll go into the other world and look for a better man." Tom swept upon them, and cut him out. Tom and he fought their way through another knot of them, and sent them flying, and came over to where I was beginning again to feel, with inexpressible joy, that I had got a sword in my hand. They had hardly come to us, when I heard, above all the other noises, a tremendous cry of women's voices. I also saw Miss Marion, with quite a new face, suddenly clap her two hands over Mrs. Fisher's eyes. I looked towards the silver house, and saw Mrs. Venning standing upright on the top of the steps of the trench, with her gray hair and her dark eyes hide her daughter's child behind her, among the folds of her dress, strike a pirate with her other hand, and fall, shot by his pistol. The cry arose again, and there was a terrible and confusing rush of the women into the midst of the struggle. In another moment, something came tumbling down upon me, that I thought was the wall. It was a heap of Sambos who had come over the wall, and of four men who clung to my legs like serpents. One who clung to my right leg was Christian George King. "Yup, so jeer," says he, "Christian George King sar very glad so jeer a prisoner. Christian George King been waiting for so jeer such long time. Yup, yup." What could I do, with 25 of them on me, but be tied hand and foot? So, I was tied hand and foot. It was all over now, boats not come back, all lost. When I was fast bound, and was put up against the wall, the one-eyed English convict came up with the Portuguese captain, to have a look at me. "See," says he, "here's the determined man. If you had slept sounder last night, you'd have slept your soundest last night, my determined man." The Portuguese captain laughed in a cool way, and with the flat of his cutlass, hit me crosswise, as if I was the bough of a tree that he played with. First on the face, and then across the chest and the wounded arm. I looked him steady in the face without tumbling, while he looked at me, I am happy to say. But, when they went away, I fell, and lay there. The sun was up, when I was roused and told to come down to the beach and be embarked. I was full of aches and pains, and could not at first remember. But, I remembered quite soon enough. The killed were lying about all over the place, and the pirates were burying their dead, and taking away their wounded on hastily made litters, to the back of the island. As for us prisoners, some of their boats had come round to the usual harbor to carry us off. We looked a wretched few, I thought, when I got down there. Still, it was another sign that we had fought well and made the enemy suffer. The Portuguese captain had all the women already embarked in the boat he himself commanded, which was just putting off when I got down. Miss Marion sat on one side of him, and gave me a moment's look, as full of quiet courage, and pity, and confidence, as if it had been an hour long. On the other side of him was poor little Mrs. Fisher, weeping for her child and her mother. I was shoved into the same boat with Druce and Packer, and the remainder of our party of Marines, of whom we had lost two privates, besides Charker, my poor, brave comrade. We all made a melancholy passage, under the hot sun over to the mainland. There, we landed in a solitary place, and were mustered on the sea sand. Mr. and Mrs. Macy and their children were amongst us, Mr. and Mrs. Portage, Mr. Kitten, Mr. Fisher, and Mrs. Beltet. We mustered only 14 men, 15 women, and 7 children. Those were all that remained of the English who had lain down to sleep last night, unsuspecting and happy, on the island of Silver Store. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.